Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Hi, and welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast. I'm Ray McLennan.
And I'm Nigel Best. Hey, Ray. Good to see you. I mean, I'm trying to video this as well. We're doing it through a Skype call, so let's see how this goes. But for those of you who are watching the video, it's right next to me on the window in the video. But we'll see how it turns out. It may be that this never sees the light of day. And there'd be a fair few people who'll probably breathe a sigh of relief if that's the case.
Well, our voices will be going out over the airwaves because this will be the podcast. And the podcast is The Psychology of Borrowing Money. Now, this is an interesting subject. And over the years, I have seen many people who come, obviously, to raise money and who want to borrow a ton of money. And I analyse or have a look back over deals that worked, deals that didn't work, people that got the money, people that didn't get the money, and just kind of every now and again have a wee look and see if there's anything in there that jumps out at me.
And what, lo and behold, what jumped out at you?
What jumped out at me? Well, yeah. What jumped out at me is there's an awful lot of people at the moment that want to go from doing, you know, a small refurbishment, refurbing a bungalow, or all they've done is ever painted an extension, and then they want to do a commercial conversion, or they want to build 20 flats, and get really quite annoyed when, you know, when you tell them that they fall at the first hurdle, which is credibility. And there is a limit to what you can handle. So what we're going to talk about in this podcast is there is a limit to what you can handle. There are five beliefs, and Nigel and I will explore those five beliefs. And we will then explain how you can grow your portfolio incrementally. And then if you want to study further into the beliefs, there are some questions you should ask yourself and find out where you are. So I think that is that's the format for this podcast.
All right, that sounds good.
Yeah, professional.
it sounds like we've done some homework. Is that couldn't be true? No, of course it is. So hang on, Ray. Let's just go back a bit. So What you're telling people is if all they've done so far is put up a rather small shelf from IKEA, their next step is probably unlikely to be a mega rich casino complex. Is that what you're saying?
Because, absolutely. Yes, of course it is. Yeah.
Because, you know, that leap, that stretch from one to the other, people, I don't know, in every walk of life, people think that will happen, don't they? But the chances are nobody ever has built a casino where the first thing that they've done is just putting up some shelves.
Correct. That's absolutely right. And, yeah, and you wouldn't expect it. If you put it that way, you wouldn't expect them to. But going from doing or building one house, for example, to building 30 flats can be viewed in the same light, because whilst you have experience building a house, then building 30 flats is not the same thing. Now, what I mean about a limit to what you can handle is not necessarily physical. It is mental, what you can mentally handle. Now, most people will say, you know, if I won the lottery tomorrow, it would change my life and I could do this, I could do that, and I could do lots of wonderful things. But statistically, that's not likely to happen. And the reason it's not likely to happen is because of the psychology of money. And the psychology of borrowing money is even worse than the psychology of being given money or winning money. But it's nevertheless the same thing and has to be treated with respect. So the psychology of borrowing money, and when I say there's a limit to what you can handle, it really means a limit to the amount that you can handle. So I'm going to just give a couple of examples. I want you to imagine you are looking at a newspaper that's got, you know, jobs in it in the days when you could do that. because now it's all online. Yeah.
What's the newspaper, yeah. Ray? What's the newspaper? Tell us, what was it like in the olden days when it was just black and white and there was no colour? Tell us, Ray, tell us.
Says Nigel with your... I'm not going to make any derogatory comments. Actually, I probably should. Baldy.
Touché.
Right. Where the hell was I? Oh, yeah. You're looking at a newspaper article.
We're in the newspaper. We're looking for jobs, aren't we?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. Now, you look in there or you're online and you're looking and you're saying, okay, what job would I like? What's my ideal job? And you see it there in black and white on the screen. It's an ideal job. You look at it and you think, that's for me. I could do that. And it would be wonderful. I'd leap out of bed in the morning and I would love to do that particular job. I wouldn't go Monday to Friday 9 to 5. I'd do it all the time. So if that's the case, what would that salary be? What would they pay you? So this is a question to you listening, obviously. What would they pay you? Now, there's no right or wrong answer. Some people say, oh, 100 grand, that's good enough for me. And others go, no, I want 250. And others say, I want £1 million. You know, that's going to be my salary. Whatever it is for you, that's absolutely fine. But the psychology of borrowing money is that if you have an amount in your head, and I hope you do, then the amount of money that you could handle relatively well in borrowing terms would be about 10 times that amount. So if you've said to yourself, well, actually a 60, 70 grand salary would do me, then your borrowing is going to be 700,000 or under £1 million. And that's because self-sabotage would start to kick in. Now, self-sabotage comes from your beliefs. And there are 5 categories of beliefs.
There are, but right, hold on. Before we dive into those categories, the types of beliefs that are out there, I just want to go back to a couple of things that you mentioned because I think they tie in pretty well. The first one is, if somebody came up to you, Ray, or a group of people in a room and said, okay, each one of you has won £10 million on the lottery. Write down what you would do with that money. What's the first thing that comes into your head? And it's probably buy a house, buy a speedboat, send your family off on a cruise or amazing holidays, or buy a house for, you know, it's whatever you write down there, mm-hmm. that tends to reflect your beliefs about what you would do if you had suddenly had some money. And the amazing thing is, when somebody asked me the question, my first thought was, I'll invest it. And what you tend to find for the majority of the public is we are given this sort of constant commentary about the fact that if you win some money, so if you sit on breakfast TV and they're giving 30,000, 40,000 pounds in a car and all the rest of it, and the first thing they always say to the person is, what are you going to spend it on? It's like this inbuilt society thing that says, right, if you get some money, how fast can you get rid of it? What are you going to get with it? How fast can you get rid of this money? And won't that be great when it's all gone? Mm. And I think that does tend to come back into some of the things we're going to talk about. The second thing, what else were you talking about then? And because I've just forgotten it. It was a stunning point. It was a stellar point. It really was. Yeah, I even surprised myself with what it was. But no, it's what else? It was on the property side of things, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It'll come back to me.
It will come back to me. Through the conversation.
Or in the middle of the night, you know, as I often say, people often ask me, how do you sleep? And I always say, I sleep like a baby, you know, wake every half hour screaming. And this is some of the things that we're going to talk about, isn't it? Your beliefs and how that manifests itself in the middle of the night.
Okay. Well, when it comes to beliefs or changing beliefs, there isn't a one size all formula. What works to change varies from person to person, and what affects people changes from person to person. And you know, one of these may be applicable to you, or you may be thinking, no, none of these are applicable to me, because a lot of this is at a very subconscious level. So the 5 categories of beliefs, I'll rattle off what they are very quickly, what the 5 are, and then Nigel's going to tell you what the first one is in more detail. So there's core beliefs, cultural beliefs, hand-me-down beliefs, advertised beliefs, and biological beliefs. Now, this work came from a PhD chap called Nick Hall, and he has done some stunning work, Nick Hall. He wrote a book called I Know What to Do, So Why Don't I Do It? And it's the science of self-discipline. And I think some of this comes from that book. Certainly, there's a thread that runs through that book. So the five categories of beliefs: core, cultural, hand-me-down, advertised, and biological. So, Nigel, what is a core belief?
Yeah, core belief. So this is from Nicole's book, which is Change Your Beliefs, Change Your Life. So a core belief, this is your deepest conviction, and it's almost hardwired into your emotional side of the brain. So it is putting yourself, if ever you find yourself doing something, typically you are being driven by your core belief. And wherever you are trying to do something or someone's asking you to do something which is in conflict with that, you will tend to feel you might become ill. You might feel that there's pain. You might get, there's some sort of effect on you because this is going against your core belief. Now, there's a great example of this, and they did a study of two guys in America. I think they were both FBI agents, and they'd both been involved, sadly, in gun battles, which you see the TV and our belief is that the entire America is a non-stop gunfight. But there you go. That's something that we'll talk about later and advertise beliefs. But no, these two guys have been involved in it. Now, the first one, he had been pinned down behind a wall by a guy with automatic gunfire. He has his standard issue revolver or fire sidearm. And when the guy firing at him, he's firing bullets. Bullets are whizzing over his head. He's ducked down, and all of a sudden it goes quiet. So obviously he's run out of bullets, and he's probably going to be reloading. This guy stands up, takes aim, and shoots the bad guy and kills him. That was at a distance of about 50 yards, which is a pretty good shot with a pistol. The second guy, he was working in as a desk job. Perfectly same training, same ability with firearms, same scores, same sort of pattern of behavior and ability as an officer. They had a guy, a crazed gunman, who broke into the office. And as this guy came into the office, he discharged his automatic weapon. But this guy stood up and discharged his sidearm from a distance of about 10 or 11 yards and missed with every single round. Now, when they did some analysis, that guy unfortunately got shot but recovered. When they did some analysis and looked at whether the beliefs or what was it in the background, what was it in their makeup that made one hit from a long range and another miss from close range? And they found that the first guy had very much been involved in team sports, and whenever the situation was, okay, back's against the wall, we've got to win this one, there's the baddie, we're not going to let them get away with it. His beliefs kicked in, and when the opportunity arose, he took the opportunity, and it seems like he was able to aim true, shoot the guy. The second guy, when they looked at it, he had been the son, the only child of a Baptist minister with a very strict upbringing of never to hurt another human, never take a human life. Now, this speculation, is there a correlation? Who knows? But perhaps your core belief really comes to the fore when you are put in a very life-threatening situation, something where you have got to make it, you will act instinctively. What's that hardwired belief in you? And we've all got them. We've all got them. And what we'll talk about later as we go down this is we will pose you some questions where you'll be able to tease out whether those beliefs, what are they for you and whether they serve you? Because obviously for the first guy, he survived a shootout. The other guy nearly died in the shootout. Okay. So there's a very dramatic life and death situation, example.
There's a scene in the film Pulp Fiction, isn't there, where the two hitmen, which is John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson, are in, or is it Lawrence Fishburne? I always get mixed up with these two.
No, Samuel L. Jackson. I will strike down with furious vengeance.
great anger and furious vengeance, those That's who attempt to despoil and the honor. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So they're in the room, and the guy bursts out the kitchen and he fires, doesn't he?
Yes.
The whole of
all the way around.
It makes a body shape in the wall and misses them all completely, and then they turn and they have no qualms about returning fire there.
No, but let's get in character, Ray. Let's get in character, as they say.
Let's get a character. That's it. Yeah. So, well, I think core beliefs do come through subliminally, subconsciously, very much so. All right. Let's go on to cultural beliefs now. This is obviously cultural beliefs is the beliefs that you grow up with and you acquire from the culture that you're brought up in, and whether that's religious or whether that's, you know, capitalist, political, whatever it happens to be, that will influence your choices and value system. I think it was Ricky Gervais talking about culture. It was Ricky Gervais who said, isn't it bizarre that you can be born in England, that people can be born in India, people can be born in China, people can be born in Mexico, and they've all got the right God. They've all got the right God. Their God is the right God and everybody else's is wrong. And that's cultural beliefs and indoctrination, actually, which can be, it can be very, very strong in a lot of cultures. When it comes to, obviously, the How to Raise Money podcast, when it comes to borrowing money or lending money, there are many cultures that won't have anything to do with that. And there are many cultures that won't have anything to do with interest or paying interest or receiving interest. And then there are other cultures that have absolutely no qualms whatsoever about receiving rather a lot of interest. So those beliefs can be very, very strong and very tough to break. That's the thing about these kind of beliefs, is they're invisible, but they're very, very tough to break. And culture beliefs can be one of the strongest ones.
Yeah, I mean, you only need to look at a very simple one, cultural beliefs, what people eat. You know, go to whichever country you want, and there'll be a belief about some food or something you're eating that other people would find absolutely abhorrent and disgusting and what have you, where that other people think, no, this is normal. I believe this is good for me. At the moment with Brexit, Europe, the idea was bring all of Europe together. But what do we find? Those cultural differences remain. You know,
very much so.
And then
very
they are
so.
Very hard to get
well.
Over. Yeah, absolutely. Tribal, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, following on from that, next one, the hand-me-down beliefs. And these can come from lots and lots of sources. So the cultural beliefs, culture is obviously handed down. But typically this, what we're talking about here are parents, grandparents, or those around you as you're growing up. This is when you're most impressionable, when you're younger, and they've got a considerable impact on your, often your career choices, your life choices, relationships, whatever it might be. So these could be your teachers. It could be those people that are around you as you are going through things. When you have all those questions and they give the answers, it's very true. So Ray, here we go. Your school report. What did your school report say about you?
Oh, well, they varied wildly, but I didn't peak early at school. One of the things I'm trying to make sure my son or daughter don't become head boy or head girl, because I think you peak too early. There is actually a thing called head boy syndrome. You don't want to peak too early at school.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's it. I can now hang my hat on that. I was head boy of a tiny school, aged 11, and I have to say it's been downhill ever since.
Been downhill. There you go. Yeah, you are a
But no, what I mean is, on those reports, did those reports say to you things like,
must try harder.
Yeah, must try harder, or chooses not to listen to instructions, or did it say Ray does an enormous amount of work? It's just a shame he's thick. Because the weird thing is, if your school report, and the trouble is, as a kid, you don't appreciate it, do you? But if your school report said something like, he's clever, but he doesn't pay attention, and if he just followed instructions, he'd be really good at this. Because that then pretty much says, actually, what you're doing is down to your choices, the choices that you're making. Mm-hmm. But how often has a teacher said to somebody, oh, you'll never make it? You'll never make it. You know, you're hopeless. The best thing you can do is get a job down at the local council sweeping the streets or something like that. That's all you're fit for. It's full of that, isn't it? And what they're saying on these hand-me-down beliefs, the best one, here we go, the best one. How many people out there listening to this podcast have themselves or someone else in the family, when they've done maths, they've struggled And they've had a mum or a dad or someone else who's come along and looked at it and said, oh, don't worry. Your dad's rubbish at maths. I'm rubbish at maths. Your mum's rubbish at maths. Yeah, it's in the genes. There's not a lot you can do. And how many kids give up on maths or any subject based on the fact that somebody else says, oh, well, we've never been good at that. And that ties into the money, doesn't it, Ray?
It does indeed.
When families sort of say, oh, we've never been good with money. We've never had money. These are the hand-me-down beliefs that people pick up and run with for their entire lives without even realizing that they're doing that.
Easy come, easy go. I've heard people mention as well. And
Money doesn't grow on trees. What do you think? I am made of money? All these things. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. Fascinating. Right.
So the next one is advertised beliefs. Now, this, I mean, they all kind of tie in, but the promoted myths of our own particular culture, your advertised beliefs and you know, the repeated often enough and impact your way of thinking. And it's at an early age that these develop, because when you've got impressionable young minds, then they can be influenced. And I mean, what's that story they say? Show me the child at seven and I'll show you the man. As an expression, that it's basically what happens to you in the formative years of your life that can really start to entrench some of these things. But I think there's another time when these can be entrenched as well. It's like, almost like a double whammy, is you've got your childhood up until you're about 7, 8, 9 years old, and then you've got puberty. When you sort of, whatever, with you're a girl, it tends to be earlier, but let's say 12, 13, 14, 15 is the usual range. And it's when I suppose children are going through more peer pressure, more other pressure than they've ever had in their life, and there's all these hormones raging, and they're the least qualified to deal with it, that's when they need strong parenting, and that's when they need a bit of guidance. And I think as well, when you see all the, I mean, you mentioned earlier on about the breakfast show where, you know, 50 grand, you've just won 50,000, and you see people whooping and dancing, and then what are you going to spend it on? I'm very conscious of turning to my children when I see that and saying to them, you know, you should be thinking about investing that money, never mind spending it. And then actually saying that, what would you invest it in? And we have, I mean, there's a game called Cash Flow you can get from Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And there's a couple of other similar type games where you can play investment strategies and make a difference that way. So I'm trying to overcome the advertised beliefs and the stuff you get, you know, on the television, which they obviously watch, or the less and less they're watching YouTube and things like that now. But then there's adverts popping up on there as well now. So I'm actually trying to take the cultural hand-me-down and advertised beliefs and make them as positive as I possibly can, rather than just sitting back and letting it wash over. Because one thing I do know about children, I have four of them, is they may be sitting there saying nothing. They may be even looking at something else and not, you know, you think they're not listening, but they are. They're like absolute sponges. Absolutely everything goes in there, and then it tends to come back out. Again, usually at a point when you don't wish it to come back out. But that's another story and another podcast for another day.
But, I mean, Ray, on the advertised beliefs, I've got kids as well. And just at the moment, whilst we're doing this podcast, there's this horrible aspect to social media whereby people will go on there and they will advertise beliefs, not in the strictest sense of paid advertising. They will just espouse their sort of thoughts about it, and especially about teenage suicide or even younger suicide. And they're just getting people to, they're showing them a belief that they are worthless or that there's nothing for them, or the future's barren and bereft of any joy and all the rest of it. And that the best thing you can do is to end it all. And this is incredibly powerful. And all it needs is, you know, when somebody, I always remember they did, when I was, it must be 20 odd years ago, and they did one of these, have you ever done these 360 degree, what do they call it, feedback things? So you get this feedback from your colleagues, those above you and those below you sort of thing in the hierarchy. And I always remember this guy, and he was a funny guy. I used to quite like talking to him because I loved his attitude. But he came back to me and he said, I said, oh, how did it go? He said, well, When the first person said I was a bumptious oaf who was a bit of a fool and, you know, very condescending, I dismissed him for the fool that I thought he was. When the second person said exactly the same thing, I began to think, ah. When the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth person said that they thought I was a real pain in the ass, he said, I began to realize maybe there's something to this. And I think on the advertised beliefs, you see it once and you kind of think, ah, rubbish. You see it 3, 4, 5, 10 times and you think, you know, this must be true. This must be true. And that's all advertisers are trying to do, isn't it? Get in front of you as many times as possible. That herd mentality. If everybody's doing it, why am I not, you know, why not me? So adverts. There we go.
All right. Okay, Nigel, last one, biological beliefs.
Biological, that one? Yeah, so this is what Nicole says on this. These are cues your body is exposed to at times of significant emotional experiences. Without conscious awareness, when you subsequently encounter these cues, your body believes the same circumstances exist and responds accordingly. Here's the thing. Have you ever had something where, say you met the love of your life and there was a particular song playing? Mm-hmm. Every time you hear that song playing, you may well be transported back to that moment and you'll get those same feelings again. Similarly, with people that have had traumatic events or experiences, whether it's a smell, any of your senses, something you heard, something you smelled, something you saw, whenever those come back, you are transported back to that moment, be it traumatic mm-hmm. or wonderful. And it's amazing how, I don't know about you, Ray, but thinking back to kind of school age and when songs came out, and I remember recording the top 40 with a tape recorder held up to the single speaker on the 3-channel TV that we used to have and what have you. But those songs are linked to a certain point in my life. Mm-hmm. And whenever I hear them, I kind of go back to that point in time. And they've done some really quite frightening analysis and experiments of people that have suffered really traumatic events. So car crashes or being mm-hmm. kidnapped or things like that.
Yeah.
Any sort of food. So, for kidnappers, if they were served certain foods or smells, then whenever they have it, they can actually test that the body is reacting to that as if they were going through it again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, these things are amazing. So one of the things is obviously, I guess they'd call it anchoring.
Yeah.
Anchor a positive belief with something that's really positive. So whether it's a song or whether it's a drink. So if you like a glass of champagne, every time you have a little, a success in your life, you know, if you get good at it, you'll turn into an alcoholic.
Yep.
You know, there you go. So, you know, maybe that's an ambition, but you know, it's those sort of things, isn't it? You know, reward yourself with something, listen to your favorite song. So a lot of people before they're going for a talk to give a talk on stage will mm-hmm. pump themselves up. Sportsmen will go through maybe an affirmation or something like that, because yep. when they get into that sort of that feeling, then they go out and perform to their best. So that's kind of the biological belief angle. So all right. fascinating, okay. isn't it?
It is fascinating. Oh, we could go on for hours on this, but we've got to stick to the topic, which is how to raise money, and there is a limit to what you can handle. So we've talked about five categories of beliefs there: core, cultural, hand-me-down, advertised, and biological. Okay, we want to get on now to how do you get to that point where you can take a lot of money and handle a lot of money? Well, it's a process, an incremental process, actually, because if you're looking at borrowing money to build a business or to build a property empire, then you've got to start somewhere. You've got to start somewhere. And for most people, you'd have to work your way up. Now, you'll see, and I'm sure if you go to Facebook or you go anywhere, you'll see people who've, you know, I started last week and now I have a portfolio of 6 million and 500 houses, you know, and only did it in a month. Everybody goes at a different pace, and you can never compare yourself to others. What you want to do is look after yourself, look after your family, look after your own patch, and let everyone else worry about theirs. So for most people, the best way to be able to handle borrowing larger amounts of money is to borrow smaller amounts of money. And it can start off quite simply by saying, okay, well, I have a buy to let, I have one buy to let, and I want to borrow the money for the furniture, or I'm changing to service accommodation and I need to borrow £20,000 for that. Start off that way, pay it back, then take out larger loans and then maybe buy a property and then pay it back, and then buy a second one and pay it back, and start building up that credibility. So you do the buy-to-lets first if it's property, then you can perhaps look at doing an HMO, or you can do more of what you're good at. If you decide you want to go up the ladder, then you, by all means, you can. No one's stopping you from doing that. But you need to take the incremental approach. Do not, as Nigel said, come out having the experience of putting up a couple of IKEA shelves and then you want to build a casino. It's never going to work. So it's incremental. It's got to be incremental, and that way you're going to be treated credibly. Now, having said that, having said all of that, I'm about to contradict everything. Because one way
careful,
that you
Ray,
can...
Careful,
I know, careful. Yeah, I know, the contradiction alert. We should have a car horn or something, like one of those old 1920s car horn. You know,
I was going to say, yeah, I do have some sound effects somewhere. Whilst you're going on, I'll just lob it in at some point.
and find a side effect. Okay. So while I'm saying you grow your portfolio incrementally, there is a way that you can, of course, accelerate the process. And that is by joint venturing with someone. By joint venturing with someone who has the credibility. You can joint venture with someone who has the track record. And that way you can borrow more money. But then you've got a team member, and then it's a team game, and you're moving forward together rather than you just trying to do it on your own, where you run the risk of self-sabotage. So there we go. That is the psychology of borrowing money. There's a limit to what you can handle. We talked about five beliefs, and we've suggested that you grow your portfolio incrementally. Now, if you want to do more of this, if you want to look more into it, there are certain questions that you want to ask yourself, and we'll put the link into the show notes for the podcast so that you can access. I think we're going to do that, aren't we, Nigel? You're frowning.
Yeah. No, we will do. We will do. We'll put that in because these are, whenever you feel you're encountering one of your beliefs, these are really good questions to go through. With the express intention that if you wish to change that belief, then if you go through these questions, you'll at least understand where you are, and then you can start taking the steps to do it. One of the things that we mentioned before, Ray, was, you know, when you're talking, and I've kind of remembered what I'd forgotten right at the beginning. if you're earning 25 grand a year and you are 50 years old, then to suddenly turn around and say, in the next 3 months, I'm going to earn £100,000 or I'm going to make £1 million. Your body is not really believing it because you've done 50 years and only got to 25,000. How the hell are you going to do something like that? And it's a bit like if we were walking along and there was a river and I said, come on, Ray, let's cross this river. And you took one look at it and you went, well, I can't jump it. It looks too fast flowing. That looks ridiculous. And then I came along and heaved in some big boulders and say, right, well, we'll step onto this one, and then we'll go onto the next one, and then we'll do the next one, and then we'll be at the other side. You will suddenly believe that those smaller stepping stones are going to work. And that's what you're trying to do with these beliefs. Analyze them. Are they helping you? Are they not helping you? What can you do to change it a bit? How can you do it? How can you step up from going from 25 grand up to 100,000, a million? And so on. So there we go.
Excellent. Okay. Well, on that bombshell, that has been the How to Raise Money podcast, and it has been on the psychology of borrowing money. I've been Ray McLennan.
And I'm still Nigel Best. Excellent. Ray, enjoyed it. Good one.
All right.
See you
on the next.
We'll see you again. Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. You can find all that at howtoraisemoney.co.uk. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ray_McLennan and Nigel Best at Positive Nigel. You can check the blog at raisingangelfinance.blogspot.co.uk. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?